Almost all bears discover in a little while that what they've outgrown makes quite a pile.
Awesome. That's it.
Thank you.
That's great. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I'm your host, Phil Gonzalez, and this week we are taking a look at the third book in our The Berenstain Bears Kinda Help People Out Rough series that I've been talking about for a few weeks. In our first book, The Berenstain Bears Lend a Helping Hand, we saw them help clean out Ms. McGriz's attic, where they got all of her old junk and helped her start a yard sale. And the cubs expected no reward, but instead actually got rewarded tens of thousands of dollars in valuable antiques, which was weird. So the point of it kind of went out the window. Last week we did the Berenstain Bears clean house, in which the bears didn't actually clean their house. They cleaned out all of the rooms. They were going to have a yard sale of all their old stuff, but at the last minute they decided, you know what, we like owning a lot of stuff, and they put all their old stuff in the attic and enjoyed having stuff, and then they sat in the living room and watched TV. So that was a weird lesson. And then this week is kind of a synthesis of the two, the idea of cleaning out all your old stuff and helping people out. This is 1999's The Berenstain Bears, Think of Those in Need. We are back to dealing with only the four main bear characters. This is pre the birth of Honey Bear. So we have Mama, Papa, sister, and a brother. And since I think I'm a nice guy. I think I'm a relatively swell person. But if you would ask me, hey, Phil, what's the best way to think of those in need? I will probably come up short because I'm not good at doing actual helpful things. I have a Berenstain Bears podcast. So to help me out thinking of those in need, to see what those bears are doing and to see if they're actually doing anything helpful, I have on the show today community health organizer and advocate, Joanna Lund. Hello.
Hello,
Joanna.
Phil. Hello,
thanks for being on my show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk about how to help those in need.
Oh, I would love to I would love to actually know how to help those in need because, well, before we get started on what those bears are doing, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Were you familiar with the Berenstain Bears before today?
I was, yeah. I read Berenstain Bears books growing up.
Oh, yeah?
Never with such a critical eye, but yes, they were part of my childhood.
Do you remember any titles in particular or...
No, what stands out most to me is the illustrations of the Berenstain Bears. Mm-hmm. They're just kind of weird. They're really curly and they were unnerving to me as a child. That's my most outstanding memory.
People usually point out the claws, the fact that the bears have really long fingernails and toenails.
And they're just so curly.
Yeah. Well, why would they cut them? They're bears.
Truly.
They got to have them to...
They're like living in a tree.
Yeah. So. I mean, you would think, I would guess if you don't have claws and you touch like the interior of the tree, you're going to get splinters.
Could be. Or they also have like upholstery.
That's true.
So it's a little bit of a mystery there.
Now that I think about it, I'm like, I wonder if we never actually know what their fabrics are made out of.
Yeah.
Maybe it's some sort of advanced wire or some tough
just really steel wool.
Everything they own is made out of.
And then it would always be sharpening the claws.
And they're covered in fur, so it wouldn't bother them.
Yeah.
It's not like wearing they could wear a hair shirt and they'd be like, yep, that's what I'm wearing every day.
I'm warm.
Yep. Very warm bears. So yes, and as the Berenstains said, just because people expect me to say this, the reason they have such long fingernails and toenails is because they're bears. They're drawn bears.
Yeah.
And of course we're they have cars, so I guess it's a balance.
Yeah. Humanoid bears with long claws.
They are very humanoid bears with long claws. So why don't we talk about a little bit not much happens in this book. It goes through pretty quickly, but what happens in this book?
So the Berenstain Bears realize Mama Bear leads the charge and saying, we have too much stuff. And then they do a little bit of finger pointing where the kids have too much stuff. Well, what about Papa Bear? He has too much stuff. And then Papa Bear's like, yo, Mama Bear, you have too much stuff too. And then they all come to consensus that there's too much stuff. They gather the things and then they deliver them throughout Berenstain Bearville. Whatever city
Bear
they live
town,
in.
Bear Town,
of course.
Deep in the heart of bear country.
Yes. And then they feel good about having given away these things that they deem useless. And then at the end, they're like, and we don't need more things, but also we might.
Mm-hmm.
When they are looking at the nice things in the window as they pass by.
Well, speaking of the illustrations, we get a picture of Papa Bear in the bathtub, which I've never seen in my life.
Yeah.
You don't usually see the bear family portrayed in a private moment like this.
Uh-huh, so, uh huh.
And then right next to it, we have a picture of the bear family next to what they, I guess, are deciding a family in need looks like.
Yeah, yeah. And they also use the verb, the adjective needy, which is problematic, I think.
Needy.
Yeah. It just, like, they are suffering. It's their fault. And they are, needy is just, like, such a pejorative word, mm-hmm. you know, when it's people who are, like, going through some sort of crisis that usually is beyond their control. And yeah, like dressed in rags. And this is what somebody in need would look like, when that often is also not the case.
Right. It's interesting because you have the bear family and they're surrounded by like their boom box and their bird cage, which I guess is like a symbol of like
luxury.
We have a TV. Mom has a basket of flowers. Sister has a baby doll. And the family in need, it's interesting how they draw them. They have sort of dour expressions on their faces. Mm-hmm. The mama is like pulling a shawl around her shoulders. She's got like we call it the bear's shmata, like the head rag. That's mm-hmm. like, it means, I guess, I do a lot of housework or something. I don't know. There's indicators there, but they're dressed pretty similarly to the bear. Like the bear family is a rural-ish family. So they're dressed in like work overalls and like a house dress. And the mm-hmm. kids are just wearing pants and a shirt. But you're still, the colors are very muted and I don't know, but you can tell that they are signifying these people have not.
Yeah. And you can see the mom of the needy family is like gazing upon all of the things of the Berenstain Bear family.
Yes.
And they're just sad and dejected. And kind of more like homeless is what comes to me when I see that family.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the easy go-to of people in need. Are homeless or experiencing homelessness, which is true, but also is not the case. And like right now in I'm doing a lot of work in the suburbs, and like what is being experiencing housing insecurity, food insecurity look like? And they look like your neighbors. Mm-hmm. It's people who you wouldn't assume, you can't look at people and assume that they're struggling in some way is often the case. You can think, of course, people that you see, you know, on the street are experiencing need, but that's not always, it certainly doesn't end there. And as we go into times of increasing income inequality and different, just inequality in our society and such mercurial society of changing jobs, changing just things, healthcare changing, people can really quickly be thrown into crisis with a car, you know, they like a car repair or a medical thing that comes up all of a sudden, or that they're let go from their work. And so it's somebody that can look very affluent. They yesterday were considered affluent, but now they can't put food on the table. And so they look exactly like everyone else. They may look a little more dejected because they can't put food on their table. But
right.
Yeah, it's misleading to think that I always push back and saying, don't assume who is in need. Like that person shouldn't be participating in this community meal. You're not allowed to say that, actually. Yeah. So yeah.
It's interesting because I find in these books, whenever it's like, so a few books ago, they lent a helping hand and they helped Ms. McGriz, the widow McGriz, mm-hmm. who is doing okay. Like she's out and about in the community. We talked a lot about how like she gets from place to place using public transit. She obviously cooks for herself. She lives alone. And mom is like, we need to help her out. See if we can help her clean her house. And she's like, great. Thank you for the help.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a yard sale and it's fine. And we talked about how like that was sort of an interesting thing because they were helping someone within their community mm-hmm. with a name and a personality and a face who they knew. It's interesting that when it comes to helping people who have now been designated needy, not mm-hmm. just like someone who needs a helping hand, mm-hmm. but people who are in need, it's no longer named characters. It's not Lizzie Bruin's family down this. Oh my gosh, did you hear? Like Lizzie Bruin's dad lost his job and they're having, and all of a sudden, like they are suddenly finding themselves in a financial position that is different than it was 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
You never find that like it's a member of their community who is suddenly needing help. It's mm-hmm. always these other
those people.
Nameless bears.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mama literally has a nightmare about all of the stuff in the house attacking
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also interesting in that this is framed as not so much helping people out, but also
helping yourself.
You said it in your description. Getting rid of all that stuff you don't want.
Yeah, yeah, that's causing you stress. And so really, when you're talking about helping like the others, those people, then it turns into like showing up for my community from that to save your mentality. Mm. And that's what I get a lot of this of people like, we're getting rid of the stuff that are that's causing our anxiety. And that's fair. That's real. We need to like make sure that we're taking care of ourselves. But then like in also let's do this so that we can feel better about ourselves.
Right.
And there's the savior mentality. And then like what often comes up is the white savior mentality. And not saying that like the racial lens on this is a whole nother conversation, but like that is often the thing of like, oh, I'm going to go and do this really like hands-off thing that's really easy to do. And then I've done my part. And right. Now I can like go to sleep at night and not have nightmares about like trains and frogs and toys.
That frog puppet gets a lot of like play. Like they keep showing the frog puppet. I've never seen it before. Now, historically, but within the bear universe, the characters tend to have nightmares that urge them on to their next step. And they're always very plot specific nightmares in which they wake up screaming. Mama Bear, literally, it says, "What's the matter?" asked Papa when Mama woke up screaming, which is, that's a lot of stress.
Yeah, that's like really acute and elevated stress. Yeah.
Right. Though it was just a dream, which I do. This is where they decide to, we have too much stuff. It's time to get rid of some of it. And they start listing broken dolls, broken airplanes.
Yeah, yeah.
Puzzles, missing pieces, games no one plays, the stuff that annoys us.
Yeah.
And it's funny that like then they go through this and they're like, let's give it to the folks who have so little.
Uh-huh. And we'll save the day because they'll be appreciative to have a plane that doesn't have a wing because right. They have nothing, and so at least they'll have that.
And this is another thing they say is especially with Christmas coming on.
Mhm.
Which I'm going to assume that a lot of this occurs around the what we call the holiday season.
Yeah.
Like that's when people start thinking like, oh, we've got to help people out now that Christmas is coming.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, that like Thanksgiving, Christmas time is the time of guilt.
Yeah.
Truly. Yeah. And what comes up for me in this is like the question of dignity of like these people have so little that they will gratefully accept our broken, rejected like things that we no longer want, which is really just disrespectful and takes away dignity of the people who are experiencing whatever need that is.
Right.
That like, I don't have enough to buy my children toys, for example. So yes, I will accept your headless doll.
Right.
Which is just like a really dehumanizing position to put that person in that like now they're going to show up and give their daughter a headless doll.
Right.
What? Mama Bear. To like stop for a second. What are you doing? And like, could it be that I assume if I can play into gender stereotypes, I assume that the headless doll is Sister Bear's.
Of course.
She probably has a doll that is in really good condition that she could give away. But then that's a big ask for her that
right.
This is a good thing and you may one day want it, but somebody else could also appreciate it, this like quality toy.
We know that brother and sister from the book, The Berenstain Bears in the Messy Room, we know that brother and sister have so many belongings that they literally have to develop a new organizational system just to keep track of them.
Mm.
Like they get new stuff all the time. These are not bears who want for much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
We know that they both the kids work hard to earn their own money to buy more stuff.
Great,
that's what they like. They're kids, you know.
Sure.
But even Papa has 17 fishing rods and zillions of old fishing magazines. Now I used to work at a used bookstore, and we would have people bring in stacks of old fishing magazines and old Reader's Digest condensed books and piles of stuff. And when we would say, we don't actually need these, they would always say, I'll just bring them to the retirement home then. I'll just bring them to like a homeless shelter. I'll just bring them to this. And we'd always be like, they don't want these either. These are just old magazines.
This is just garbage.
It's garbage. It's literally recycling. Just recycle it. And the bears fall into that as well. Mama's old cookbooks, bits of yarn and cloth, I guess. So they gather everything up, throw it into the car, and the first stop is the old bear's home, which is the first place many people I talk to think of when they think of taking stuff that nobody wants anymore.
I know, but before we get to that, I do want to point out that brother had the idea of having a yard sale to make a fortune, and Papa and sister agreed, but Mama said, uh-uh.
Yeah.
We're not going to be that greedy this time. So kudos to her. There's that.
Although, I mean, you could have a yard sale, make a lot of money, and then donate that money to an organization.
You could do that. That would be really meaningful.
That might need that money more than they need old magazines.
Yes. Money is often more effective for organizations than like donated goods.
Right.
Because they can, for what they need, they can really often get really good prices on it. So that's a good point. And maybe brother had that as a second step that he just didn't articulate.
Like, oh, wait.
Yeah, but then mama shut him down.
right. So. Mama.
Yeah, come on.
Let the kids talk.
Try to be a social justice warrior here.
He gets back on the computer. He's like, sorry, I tried to convince my mama.
Yeah.
I know I had that big donation set up, but
foiled again. So they go, they bring their unwanted things to the old, what do they do? They call it the old folks home.
It is called the old bear's home.
The old bear's home. Yeah.
Where it's literally called old bear's home. Like it says it on the sign.
Mm-hmm.
And they give their old puzzles and games, which isn't to say that like people don't want puzzles and games, but they didn't, I don't think they call the head or anything.
It doesn't indicate that now. No, they just drop by on their schedule.
And it is that notion of like, let's load it up.
Yeah.
Here we come. Here we come.
Boy, will they thank us.
Yep.
Yeah.
Arms loaded with old boxes that they probably don't have a place to put. Mm-hmm. Like, call ahead. Make sure if this is your first impulse.
Confirm that this will actually be helpful for
them.
Yes. Yeah.
Because they brought Lollipop Land and Buzzy Bee, which I assume are children's games, to the retirement home, which is, these are adults. Uh-huh. One of these guys is wearing a hat that indicates he fought in a war.
Yeah. Who's getting the Dino's box,
right?
Which is, again, ironic.
He's getting a 50-piece dinosaur puzzle. Mm-hmm. I'm like, dude, this guy's seen some stuff.
Yeah. There's a lot going on there. This is making me realize I was like, in looking at this as a child, I'd be like, why does that woman's hand like have that weird thing on it? But it should have been like, why is the veteran getting a 50-piece dino puzzle?
A dinosaur puzzle and a big bear.
Just kind of, yeah. Like not the most dignified.
Right.
You know, how can we support him in having some dignity in this process? Because
exactly.
So much has already been taken. In society, society's already taken so much from him, and now we're just perpetuating that.
Yeah, he was like, they were going to be showing Shawshank Redemption in the lounge in 15 minutes. We have to sit here and play Tiddlywinks with a bunch of kids,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
Like, we are adults.
But I will say this scene was my favorite of the book because I really appreciated that instead of just coming and like tossing the puzzles and leaving, they sat and actually interacted. Because in so much charity work, so this is charity work that they're doing, like people do the easy first step, but then they don't actually like show up to do the work, and they don't actually do like the next things that require something of their person. And so that they sat, even though it was uncomfortable for the kids, they sat and they interacted with the elders, and then they learned, oh wait, this isn't bad. And while like playing tiddlywinks with kids could be something that the elders don't like, I feel what I've seen is that elders really appreciate when people show up and spend time with them. And even if it's playing tiddlywinks with kids, they're like, great, I would actually rather do this than watch Shawshank Redemption for the 30th time in the lobby with a bunch of people that I'm with all the time. And so it's really nice. And like working, you know, in trying to, I don't work directly with senior hunger, with hunger experience in our elder community, but it's always like, okay, cool, I'll do this easy thing. But then like, oh, would you consider delivering this and maybe cooking a meal with this person who lives alone and is experiencing really extreme isolation? And that side note, that isolation really exacerbates a lot of other health problems beyond just hunger. And they're like, ooh, sorry, I'm busy. I'd rather not.
Right.
And that's where we have the need of like, can you actually show up and do the work? No.
Right.
That's where there's a dearth in our society of like, where can we actually support people in a meaningful way? You throw elders a pile of games. Okay, well, what am I supposed to do with that? I have no one to play with.
Right.
So like, that's really cool. That's really cool that they did
that. That's good to note. We have followed sort of this little journey of the Cubs' interaction with elders. We started kind of with the thing was trick or treat, where there was the Ms. McGriz, who lived down the lane, and everyone thought she was a witch, mm-hmm. which is a really weird recurring theme in children's literature, the notion that the old lady down the street's a witch.
You sure, find
that
yeah.
in a lot of books. So uh-huh. they get to know her, then they help her out. They discover that, like, even advanced seniors, like older seniors, like older than grandma and grandpa, they're members of your community. And mm-hmm. so they get to know her. And now they're getting to know members of their community who are the same age as Ms. McGriz, but who are strangers and who are in a different, they don't live in a house. They live in this home.
Yeah.
And so I will say, like, that's cool. Like, mm-hmm. we've sort of followed the Cubs on this, like, little, like, subtle journey,
like,
of
learning
theirs.
Journey.
Now, it would be cool if this book had been about that. Like, if they had been like, all right, let's focus on the Cubs learning that there are members of the community who don't live the same way they do, and
yeah.
getting to know these people, and that they're people, and that they have the same wants and dreams and hopes, are just in a different situation mm-hmm. than we are, and that there are ways to help them without patronizing to them.
Yeah,
that's a story that you can tell to kids, but unfortunately, we've got a lot more to cover story-wise in this, and so they get to know the seniors, and then they're off.
Yeah,
because they've got another hour, uh-huh. and they've got to.
And
get
we got
on the
more
road.
Stuff to give away. We have
oh, yeah.
more good deeds to
mm-hmm,
do. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And I just one more point on this. I think talking about how there's a lot of potential here for them to learn their place in the community. Reading this reminded me of a story I read a couple months ago about, like, intergenerational work. I think is really powerful and really valuable, and I'd like to see more of it instead of just the elders relegated to here and forgotten about. And then, like, families struggling to raise young ones in a society that's not really set up for that. I read this story about a Jewish community here in the United States that had this really holistic intergenerational setup where there was a home for elders on the compound, and then they had an elementary school in the same space.
I read this article. Yes.
And then they had, like, and thinking of, like, this bear then reminded me about it again, who appears to be a veteran. For example, like, they would have the kids go over and interact with the elders regularly, to just kind of, like, gives you an idea of, like, what is the expanse of society? Where do I fit in? Where can I contribute to society? And then they had, like, the elder veterans come over and talk about their experience in the wars when they were learning about those wars. Like, what an amazing qualitative experience. And the elders are able to experience something that they can contribute. The kids are able to learn in, like, a really rich way. I just thought it was such a beautiful story. And it, like, took work, but it doesn't take so much work. And it actually makes a lot of less work on the end when there's, like, a supportive society mm-hmm. like that. But, yeah, the kids are just coming in, like, checking their box and then leaving. So,
well, they are sorry when it was time to leave.
That's true. They do show a little bit of regret.
And we never visit the old bear's home again in the entire
series. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's it.
I'm
this,
like,
is it.
What if they came by once a week? No.
Nope. the next stop is Beartown Young Cubs Hospital.
Mm.
And we've been to the hospital. It says, you know, brother had his ankle x-rayed there. So this is your apparently general children's hospital. And they drop off a load of used toys. And they see a kid with his leg in a cast. And sister gives him a frog puppet, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
And literally that's it. Like, I don't know much about donating to children's hospitals. I will say again, please call ahead.
Yeah.
If you
yeah.
have a load of old toys.
I think there's two approach. I mean, one we'll just acknowledge and then move on from because it's not worth unpacking. But, like, the cleanliness issue.
Mm-hmm.
A hospital would never take a pile of used toys.
Right.
And, like, a lot of places wouldn't take a pile of used toys because of the dignity question. But then here there's also, like, the cleanliness question that they're never going to hand out
right.
an old doll.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, really reasonable. Sometimes rules, I'm like, that's maybe a bit much, but there I think it's, like, got a place. And then there's, like, the second one of more what we're talking about of, like, this is just kind of patronizing.
Yeah, especially the kid in the wheelchair. And I'm going to say, like, as a person who's read a ton of children's books that always deal with hospitals, mm-hmm. from Curious George on up, every children's hospital has a kid in a wheelchair with their leg in a cast. That is just...
Yeah, is that the go-to?
That's just, you know, they're in a children's hospital.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're going to see a lot more, like, kids with, like, chronic illnesses, kids with, you know, like, dealing with, like, things that require long hospital stays.
Yeah.
Than kids just wheeling around in a wheelchair with their leg in a cast.
Yeah, that's the easy. That's, like, the sexy one. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's easy. And even, like, a broken arm. My nephew has a broken arm right now. He wouldn't be showcased in this because that's not as... glamorous as a wheelchair.
Yeah, and he probably needs more than that frog puppet sister.
Yeah.
On their way out, they saw a young bear in a wheelchair with his leg in a big cast. They were glad they had brought the toys. He looked as if he could use some cheering up.
Mm-hmm. So a frog hand puppet. Check.
He's like, you know what? The football team is coming by later to...
Yeah, and even his face in that, he's just like, seriously?
He does.
You're wasting my time with that. Okay, move along.
The classic disgruntled bear's face. Looks like they brought a drum... a bunch of old dinosaurs, some sort of spring toy, dolls, boxes. And the nurse is beside herself with happiness.
With joy. She's so joyful. She's so grateful that these Berenstain Bear family came to share their wealth, to share their abundance. Yeah.
I mean, you know what? They're thinking of those in need. They are doing the ABC sitcom version of helping out. That's what this is. So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now we move on to Bears Who Care, which I've never seen before. Seems to be the Bear Country equivalent of, I guess, the Salvation Army.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
With the Salvation Army store, because they've got the band. It's like literally like the Salvation Army band, like you see in like Guys and Dolls. And they've got the pot out for donations in front of their own store. So this is where they're taking the rest of everything to Bears Who Care. Beartown Bears Who Care.
Like the ultimate, like they didn't want it at stop one, stop two. So now here's like the final, please take my stuff.
Yeah. And this is where we find out that it's around Christmas time.
Yeah, yeah.
Because all of a sudden they're singing Christmas carols, they're dropping money in the pot, and they're dumping off their old clothes and furniture at the store.
Uh-huh.
So this is the end. This is the last thing they do.
Yeah.
Which is go to the store.
Uh-huh. Just side note, I love that they stopped and sang some carols. Not really meaningfully helping, but community building takes like many forms,
I guess.
And group singing is always a dopamine injection. So that's really nice.
They feel really good now.
Yeah, yeah. Now they're just like really pumped up on Goodwill, like quote unquote Goodwill. But yeah.
Where it would normally, of course, be somebody just ringing a bell.
Mm-hmm,
trying
mm-hmm.
to get you to drop some money in that
These
pot.
Bears Who Care take go the extra mile.
They did. Well, it's their own store. These are probably
wearing their uniforms.
They probably went among the employees and were like, who can play the trombone? It's like me. It's like, all right.
Played in high school, fine.
Yeah. Sister gives money, and they get in their car with warm feelings about what they had done. Literally says, with warm feelings about what they had done.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we get this weird sequence where they drive through Bear Town looking at all the Christmas decorations filled with special thoughts about helping others. So filled with special thoughts about helping others that they hardly noticed the wonderful things in the windows. And then we turn the page, except maybe out of the corners of their eyes. And it's a weird... So we have this history in the books of the final page that kind of undercuts the message.
Great. That's a trend.
That's a little thing where it's like... It's that thing that they do in like Pixar movies and stuff where like you have a really heartfelt message and you're going to undercut it with humor just so people don't feel too like, no, this is so sappy.
Right.
But it always undoes any goodwill building that they've established because you're like... It's that thing. It's like... Don't worry, everyone. It's cool to still buy all the stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I wouldn't have even questioned if they didn't point it out at the end. Like, I've never believed that giving has to do with not... Like, I don't believe the two are mutually exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I believe that I can buy something for myself and also give. Like, that's... I have enough that I can do both things.
Mm-hmm.
The Bear family has enough that they can do both things. But to bring it up at the end undercuts the notion, I don't know. I just think it's a weird, like, unpleasant note to end a book on.
Yeah, and it undercuts the notion, but it also kind of runs in parallel, I think, with this the message of the entire thing of, like, you can do good and actually not do that much. You don't have to, don't worry, you don't have to make yourself uncomfortable. You don't have to go out of your way. You don't have to do any kind of big lifestyle changes or advocate for any sort of systemic change here that would make meaningful and lasting change. You can just do this little thing and that's enough. That's mm-hmm. enough. And that's like where a lot of the flaw, that really is the flaw of charitable giving, that like we're experiencing these challenges and people who are in a more affluent position think that they can just do the easy little handouts and then it's done, when like really we need to overhaul things here. And it's that continuing in that vein will not ultimately solve the problem in question. But this kind of perpetuates that idea that, yes, that's enough. And at the end of the day, you are allowed to continue with your consumer ways.
Right.
And I'll acknowledge that in this final scene, the bears look a little sheepish with that. That like they kind of know that maybe there's like maybe a little bit of guilt or there's something going on there. But ultimately, they're allowed to just continue because it's fine. It's fine. And like what you did will, it's enough. And I don't want to discourage people from pursuing those ways, but I also encourage people to continue asking, okay, what next? What else can I do? How can I show up in other ways and maybe use that abundance that I have in material goods, in capital, in time and energy to make some other changes that people who are experiencing need don't have the capacity to do. That there's always more that
right.
can happen. And so that just that comfortable thing is not enough. That's a place to start. It's a place to start learning, but that there has to be more. But also, yeah, with this, like your back to your note of it undercutting, that it's always like you can push people, but then you have to bring them back in to like not alienate them. What's coming up for me a lot is the idea of like white fragility when talking about systemic racism and systemic and structural racism. And like you can push white people to talk about it, but then it's always like, but it's okay. It's okay.
Right.
Because when you push too far, then you risk hurting them. And then there's like, and then they push back, well, I'm not going to help anyway because you're just making me feel bad. And it's like, well, that's not the point. Like you have to feel bad because people in our society are feeling bad because of like systemic racism, for example. That's like the ill that I'll choose to talk about in this example. People have to get uncomfortable and they have to go outside of their comfort zone and they have to like make change that is uncomfortable for them if we're going to do something meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like if we talk about this of like charitable giving, there's the easy example of, can Sister Bear give away a doll that actually has a head on it? She may want that, but like also that would be a way to make a meaningful change, and that has to be, it's going to be uncomfortable for you, and that's okay. You'll live. You'll wake up the next day and you'll be just fine. You can go and trade in some of your valuables from Miss McGriz and buy 10 more dolls, you
right.
know? But that's uncomfortable for people, and then they back away.
Yeah. I think that there is, of course, value in the basic premise of the book, which is you've got a ton of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need all this stuff. You don't look at it. You don't touch it. It's a good message, I think, for kids to be like, it's okay to get rid of this stuff. You don't have to surround yourself constantly with just all these belongings. Something we can try to instill in our children. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, like when you're done with something, there's other people who could use
yeah.
it. That's a beginning.
Yes.
And that's a good step. And it's a tough one with little kids
mm-hmm.
to be like, these belongings aren't who you are. They don't define you.
Yeah, you can share them. Yeah.
But the book immediately launches into this, I'm an angel for doing this
uh-huh.
attitude.
Uh-huh. For like doing this action.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there are so many avenues this book could have gone with that. Like we talked about in the beginning, like what if the people in need were friends? Like were named characters, were, you know, like what if we just spent time in one of these situations and learned about like, you know, people in need, as opposed to just like, they're the people over there. Because it shows that family in the beginning when they're imagining,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, what do people in need look like? But then they go to an old bear's home. They go to a hospital, which is just could be anyone.
Yeah.
And then they go to the store, like the Salvation Army store, which they never even see any people there. They see like the band.
They see the band in uniform. Yeah.
And so they literally never encounter this imaginary, like, poor family
mm-hmm.
that they think exists in Bear Country.
Yeah.
And like you said, it could be anyone that they pass on the street in this final little tableau. It could be the people looking in the store. It could be the people shopping. I mean, just because you're in need doesn't mean you don't go out and
you
do
don't participate in society.
Christmas shopping.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you may have that money to buy one or two things.
Or like you're choosing to use that money to buy Christmas presents for your kids and foregoing car payments.
Exactly.
You know, like what are the trade-offs that you're doing so that you can show up and like look normal in society,
right?
And not make your kids feel comfortable around their friends, that
mm-hmm.
they're not othered by
yes.
their friends.
And it is that notion that people in lower income, people who are experiencing, you know, like a food need, wouldn't have stuff. Where and it to me, it feeds into that notion of, why does the guy on the street corner have an iPhone?
Yeah.
If he's so in need, why is he talking on an iPhone? And that's, to me, that's the one I used to always hear. Mm-hmm. And it was always like, I saw a guy asking for money and then he pulled out a cell phone.
Yeah. They went to the food shelf in their car. Yeah. What are you talking about? They need food if they have a car.
And I'm like, oh, that's such a, to me, this narrative, the Berenstain Bears think of those in need, feeds into that misunderstanding of how things work.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
And I always would have to say, like, you can't look for a job if you don't have a way of answering the phone. Mm-hmm. And you can't look for a job if you don't have a way of, I don't know, accessing the internet these days.
Absolutely. And you need the internet to do anything.
And if you're going to complain about people sitting on the computers at the library all day, then don't get upset when they have to carry their computer around in their pocket, like, so that they can check for jobs. Like, people operate at so many different levels, and it goes back to what you said, where you can't just look around and know who's in need.
Yeah. And then there's also, like, that idea of, like, I am allowed to pass judgment on this person. Mm-hmm. That, like, I live my life. I don't know anything about them, but they're going to the food shelf and they also have a smartphone. Like, that's not fair. I get to say that you don't get to have that thing, or you don't get to take this asset, this resource, and also, like, and by accepting this resource, acknowledging that I'm experiencing need right now, and also get to have these other assets in your life, that you right. get to have a car or a phone or whatever it may be, that you live in a home and you, like, where did that come from? Where did that self-righteousness come
yes.
from? That somebody is allowed to say, you can't have this and also have that.
Right. It's because you don't fit what I think this is supposed to look like.
Yeah.
And it makes me uncomfortable to think that that could be me, that could be anyone, that you're not, that I can relate to you on some level.
Yeah.
That, like, why are you allowed to be happy?
Right, right.
Like, you need to be completely miserable before you ask for anything,
mm-hmm.
even yeah. though you haven't asked for anything.
Yeah, you have to be, like, completely dejected. I think about it, I like reading the advice columns in the Star Tribune, and a couple weeks ago there was one that a daughter was talking about her mom, who has for years volunteered at, like, a holiday community meal. And the idea of, like, these community food resources are only intended for those who are experiencing food insecurity, which often is not the case. They often encourage everybody to come because it's a community event. Mm-hmm. But she saw a neighbor who she assumed to be more affluent at the meal. And then she got really angry. And she said, if people are misusing these resources, that I'm not going to interact with it anymore. And I'm going to discontinue mm-hmm. my volunteering that I've been doing for years there, because I don't like seeing resources misused. And the daughter, there was a couple different points to it, but something that the columnist pushed back was, you don't get to make that call. You don't get to make that assumption that person is or is not experiencing need right now. And you also don't get to make the call of who gets to come and interact with this.
Mm-hmm.
That's just wrong. It's right. just, it's not being a good community member. It's not being a good human. And it's, like, just, it's being really selfish. And it comes from that idea that we're all, like, in the scarcity mentality, when really, in reality, we live in abundance, and we don't need to be saying that. But, like, our commercial and consumer society conditions us differently.
Yeah.
So.
Well, if a family, say, like the Bear family, was going to suddenly think of those in need, mm-hmm. if they were like, kids, we're going to try to be better people now.
Yeah.
And
let's shape up.
Let's be better people.
Let's shape up because Papa Bear just sat on a duck in the tub and that was uncomfortable for him.
Right. We have annoyed ourselves to the point of needing to become better people.
Yeah. Great. Whatever it takes.
Where would you suggest a family start? Like, how can you start thinking of those in need from an actual helpful perspective?
Yeah. I think a good place to start is like, where is your interest lie? That I think often people, when they're wanting to be charitable or wanting to be a better person, they, like, completely take themselves out of the picture. And I don't think that's appropriate. And I don't think that makes it sustainable. That if you're not doing something that you care about, then you're less likely to follow through on it. And I think that it's totally reasonable. You don't have to be 100% selfless in the work that you do, in the charity that you do. There, it's okay to, like, have a piece of your interest in that doesn't make you a bad person. So, for example, I've worked with you before in brain injury injury work because that's something that I'm passionate about. I choose to work in brain injury work versus working with Native American communities, say, because while I have supported Native American struggles through the work that I do and I see a lot of allyship with them, that's not something that I directly identify with. I am a brain injury survivor, and that's something that I identify with. So that's something that's somewhere where I'm going to invest my time because I have a piece of self-interest in that. And I think that that's really important. And that's something that our society is really good at minimizing, but it's not bad to be interested in something and to have self-interest in something. So I think that's the first thing of what resonates with you and what feels good to you to do. Do you like working with elders? Do you like working in food? Do you like doing transportation advocacy? There's so many different places, and it's important that it intersects with something that you care about. And that, again, that does not make you a bad person to pursue that. And then from there, once you can identify something that you have interest and motivation in, go to an organization whose work you respect and ask them, how can I show up to help you? Mm-hmm. Not this is what I can do, this is what I can offer, but what do you need and how can I support your mission? And that's where the real crux of the work comes in, that I think that people want what's easy and what's quick, and that fits into their schedule, but that is not often the place where you can make the most meaningful change. And the second part of that, asking how can I help, and then making a commitment to keep showing up with that. So thinking back to the bears going to the elders' home, they show up once, but then they leave, and then the impact dies with that. Versus if they made a commitment to go weekly, and they can start building those relationships and find maybe new opportunities would arise out of that, of ways that they can make an impact in that community. But instead, it's just like in and out, check the box. You know, I took my picture for Instagram and now I'm done. I've done my work. And that is just exhausting for everybody. It's exhausting for the staff at the employment house, because now they're at the elders home, because they have to keep finding new people, and you know, you have to keep starting those relationships. The elders have to keep building relationships with new people, and it just ends up being more of a disservice than anything. And with these things, I don't want to be like, well, I don't know that I can make a year-long commitment to this thing, so I'm just not going to do anything. Well, no, don't do that. But when you approach the work, think of ways that you can make it more sustainable versus just a one-off thing.
Yeah. And is there room for kids in this kind of
change? Absolutely. Yeah. And that's really, really powerful. Thinking about, so I like doing the work that I do in hunger relief, of when you can bring kids into the work. So there's places for them and not. When we're like packing boxes, no, because we're like heavy equipment. There's a lot of physical work. But there's so much value in having them in other parts of the work because of the approach that they bring and the experience that they bring. So when we talk about, I do a lot of work in schools to improve access to food programs. And just like kind of the clarity and the honesty that they bring to it is really special. And then the ideas that they can come up with. So saying like, oh, I saw this person doing that and I didn't realize why. And instead, like, you know, the way they react to that could be negative, but if they know what's actually going on, they can be really helpful and it can be a really powerful experience. And then secondarily, when it comes from youth to other youth, it's incredibly more powerful versus me coming in and talking to teenagers, I'll say. If I come in and say, teenagers, there are these things around like food resources and you should use this thing and this will be valuable to you in this way, versus a teenager who's experienced positivity from a program come and educate and advocate for it from their perspective, it's way more impactful than some random adult. And that happens with like kids talking to kids, like different populations advocating within their own. Like I'm talking to a Hmong service organization, educating them about food programs that could be valuable so that they can go and advocate for it within their communities is going to be way more impactful than me as a white woman doing that. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, any different, I'll say just like generally different, whether it's youth, whether it's people of color, different socioeconomic backgrounds, there's always value in having them being able to lead that work and not just being a token part of it or not just being an afterthought.
Yeah. Because you and I have discussed in the past, just the having different perspectives and seeing how those fit into an organization.
Absolutely. And the idea is that those different perspectives come up. If I'm working with an all like Western European team, we think the same way, we're conditioned the same way, we have the same challenges. And, you know, that's a generalization, but we have a lot of the same challenges and like hesitations in the work. For example, like no, this is the way we run meetings. We're conflict avoidant. We want to do this versus if we can bring a person of color in and have them in like a leadership position in the team, the way that would shake things up and challenge us outside of our comfort zones and challenge us to think in new and innovative ways is invaluable. Absolutely.
Well, the Berenstain Bears think of those in need. They don't necessarily follow
but, you
through.
Know, it's the thought that counts,
it's
right?
The thought that counts. There it's should something. Be a sequel book. Like, yeah. Now the Berenstain Bears actually do something for those.
Yeah,
they change
yeah.
enough about themselves that they start addressing the system. Obviously, Stan and Jan Berenstain were not. You know, huge, you know, I mean, obviously they were, I mean, Stan and Jan Berenstain were very kind people. They were very thoughtful people. They were, but they were children's book writers, mm-hmm. and this was not their background. This was,
yeah.
they didn't have any deep experience in working with nonprofits and
yeah.
going out there. I mean, the Berenstain organization does now. They do a lot of stuff around the world, but it's all very grand. It's all very, the Berenstain organization, the Berenstain family does not operate on the same level as just you and me. Like, and especially at this point, at the height of their success, it was, you know, we'll write a book about helping people out. And this is what you think, I guess.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Gather your stuff and go take it around.
But, right. And these authors were never pushed to think critically because if they're like in a comfortable place in society, they don't need to. And so then that's reflected in their books. And then the people who consume these books are going to be, you know, thinking
exactly.
probably pretty similarly.
And so this is one of the books that falls into the, like the Berenstain Bears learn about strangers, it falls into the, your heart was in the right place, but the advice you're giving is not the advice that a professional in the world in which you are now functioning would give to a person who wants to learn about
mm-hmm.
this. So the Berenstain Bears think of those in need. I would say it's not interesting enough to go out and pursue, like from an art perspective or from a story perspective. Nothing funny happens in it even. It just, to me, it just kind of sits there. So this is the part on the show where I say, does it belong in your Berenstain Bears bookshelf? I would say no. I would say don't even, you know, if you've got lend a helping hand, at least they're interacting with a neighbor and actually doing something positive. And I would say if you're not a completionist, just give it a pass.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a major plot point happens in it.
It is pretty vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
Just really, and like feel good, right?
Yeah.
If you don't dive too deep, it's fine.
Yeah. And from a continuity perspective, we learned that there's an old bear's home and one bear is wearing a military hat. So we know that there, it looks like Bear Country had some equivalent of the Korean War, I'm going
yeah.
to assume.
Yeah, so, there was some strife at some point.
So for my followers, just put that up there as well. We now know that not only did they have some form of World War II, they've had some version of strife in like
yeah.
that
some,
area of
some
the world.
Some social discord.
Yeah, in
yeah.
the 50s or so.
Yeah.
So that's it. I mean, that is the Berenstain Bears Think of Those in Need from 1999. Joanna, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Phil. This was delightful.
And for everyone else out there, I am findable on berensteinbearcast.wordpress.com. You can find me at Twitter at bstainbearcast. Go to patreon.com/deepinbearcountry. Throw a few bucks my way if you are so inclined. And remember, at the end of May,
May 24th,
I will be performing at Moon Palace Books in the Geek Love Cafe, a one-person show called Deep in Bear Country, One Man's Dive into the World of the Berenstain Bears, in which I explore how this weird podcast has completely shattered my sense of self and my idea of what human beings have to contribute to this world and made me think about things like my own mortality and whether or not I'm a good human being or not. It's a lot different than the show. At this point, it's a pretty grim experience, but I promise it'll be funnier once I actually get it up on its feet. You gotta go dark before you can rise up into the light. That's what I always say. So again, like I always say, I'll have more information as the show takes shape, but it's definitely going up. Moon Palace Books, if you live in the Twin Cities, come and check it out. They will be serving food there. All right, we'll be back with more Berenstain Bears stuff next week. Again, thank you, Joanna, for joining me. Thank you all for listening, and I will see you all next time deep in Bear Country.